We're here at Norwich Arts Centre. It's the 22nd of April 2009 with Richard Herring, who's very kindly agreed to speak with us for a few minutes before his show, The Headmaster's Son. Hello, Richard.
Hello.
And thank you very much for letting us do the interview.
My pleasure.
We've not got much time beforehand, so if we crack on.
We'll crack on.
Pete, you want to ask the first question?
This seems to be one of your most successful tours. Both sort of in critical terms, you had like 5-star reviews and stuff, 4-star reviews, and a lot of sellouts.
Yeah.
Do you think there's been anything different this time around that's contributed to this? Do you think it's the best show you've done, or do you think it's other factors?
I think it is one of the best shows I've done. I don't know if it's the best. It's very hard to describe. You know, I do different shows every year, and they're quite different from each other, so it's quite difficult to compare them. My favourite one is Christ on a Bike, which I did in 2001, which is as yet unavailable on any medium. But that was kind of the first completely solo show I did, so I kind of it'd be interesting to go back and have another crack at it in a way. I think it's a show that appeals to lots of people. There are bits in it that upset some people if you're not going to, if you're easily offended. But I think generally it's kind of a nice look back at adolescence that everyone can identify with. So I guess that's part of it. But I think it's just, I've been really, certainly over the last 5 years, kind of just putting out a new show every year and touring the country. So, you're just getting better at what you're doing, more proficient at what you're doing, and more people come every year because of that, I think. Yeah. So I don't know whether, and it goes up and down. So you never like to think, oh great, this is it. This is it. Every year I'll just get more and more people coming. So you've got to try and make sure you do good shows, and then people bring their friends next time. You get good reviews, that helps. I think I do this podcast with Andrew Collins, which I've been in for a year, and I think that a lot of new fans are coming to the live work because of that. So it's just. People come from different, there's people who come who, were 12 years old and was on TV and who haven't actually ever come and seen me before, but suddenly are now old enough to want to buy tickets to go and see me, which was probably the problem when we were Lee and Herring, is no one was coming because their mum and dad wouldn't let them out. there's all sorts of different kinds of people, and it's quite a disparate audience I get. There are kind of teenagers who come, which I kind of think with this show, I don't know how much teenagers will get out of it, because it's about being a teenager and looking back at it. But then they do seem to get stuff out of it, and people might, I think this show really resonates with people of my own age, because there's a lot of references that really, if you're 40 or 41, really sort of bang on, and then older people come as well, so it's nice to get that. But there's no way of me being able to judge whether it's the best show or why people are really coming. But I think if you just keep going and work hard, it's gratifying in that it's based on people coming because they like me rather than coming because they've seen me on TV. If I'd suddenly done a big TV show and now 1,000 people coming, 900 of them would probably have never seen anything I'd done before.
Yeah.
Whereas if you build it up gradually year by year, the majority of the audience have probably seen last year's show. So, the people, you can sense it at the beginning because there's a few kind of slightly off-colour jokes early on, and you can sense some people going, oh my goodness, it's going to be like this, and then it gets worse and that sort of. But there's lots of nice stuff as well, So, and I guess if you've seen before, you're kind of aware of that's coming, or if you've listened to the podcast, the people who listen to the podcast are slightly disappointed it isn't ruder, because the podcast is so disgusting, whereas this is quite charming. So, but it's very difficult to judge. But yeah, it's that gratification of knowing, I think, that it's mainly just about building up an audience as you're going. But and having grasped, I've worked pretty hard for the last 5 years, especially. It was sort of like a double act down and ended, and it was kind of like starting again for both of us, really. More so for me than Stu, because Stu's solo act is not that different than what he was doing in the double act.
Yeah.
And I had to kind of reinvent myself and get used to performing on my own, which I'd never really, I did it very, very early on, but I convinced myself I could only work with other, I was better at working with other people.
Yeah.
It's nice to feel that you're having a sort of second bite at it and building up, but also, I feel very fortunate that I'm in this position. I can come out and tour the country and write a new show every year, and enough people will come to make it worthwhile.
Great. Your shows often contain a mix of sort of more provocative elements and things that perhaps are more obviously intended to make the audience, or will more obviously make the audience laugh. Do you find it hard to sort of reach a balance between these two things?
It just seems to come down the way it comes out. It's quite difficult to put a show together, and when you're at this stage and the show's really ready and finished, it's really impossible to see how you put it together. I'll get to this stage when I'm just about to start working on a new show.
Yeah.
And think, how the hell did I create a show this kind of deep and this sort of, you know, with this much resonance and this much kind of callbacks. And when you actually sit down and try and write something, this is it. But what happens is you go on stage and you do something 50 times and then 100 times and 150 times, and you just get better. You know, just it's just like chipping away the edges that are rough and discovering new rooms, and it's like exploring something and finding a new room with a new bit of material. So, you know, you just get to that at a different point maybe each time. With this show, I did like about 50 or 60 previews, which is way more than I usually do. So by the time it got to Edinburgh, it was really ready, which is unusual for me. You spend the first week of Edinburgh kind of really... And then I think that's why the reviews are better this year, because it was ready earlier on, so the reviewers came straight away and saw it straight away. And, you know, usually they don't come in the second or third week when usually my shows are quite good in Edinburgh. or better than they were in the first week. So, you know, it's I don't really subconsciously go, how I'm going to put this rude bit in or this... You know, I guess with this show... I just had a lot of material that I was trying to put together, and the rudest thing, the kind of most out there bit in this show is me talking about having small hands and using them to wank off paedophiles. You may not be able to use some of your broadcast. But it's sort of so extreme that was actually the only bit I was doing as a bit of stand-up. And in a way, it kind of stands out as not being part of the show, because it's sort of the rest of the show is all stories about being... Children in a way, it sort of, you know, fit, but it did sort of fit in, and it was kind of nice to have it, because I think if you didn't have it, it would just be a sort of, you know, not quite Peter Kay, but a sort of look back at the reminiscing of that childhood, and it's kind of nice to throw things around. And actually, and there's some, you know, a lot of it's accidental, a lot of it comes together, and you spot themes or you spot connections between different routines, and then it looks a lot cleverer than it would certainly if you'd sat down to write it. It would have been amazing if I'd just sat down and go, right, well, I'm going to have this theme of father sons, I'm going to have this theme of, you know, borderline sort of paedophilia and sexual, you know, and because then it kind of leads up to various different kind of payoffs as you're going through, but it's because it works sort of backwards. So I just pretty much do what I think's funny or interesting, and some of it isn't meant to be funny, and some of it, and especially in this show, some of it's a little bit more serious, which was kind of an interesting diversion, really. But usually I'm just trying to think what's the funniest thing I can do, and then, you know, and then try and make it as a whole. And with this show, it was easy, because it's a story, the show, which I haven't done for a little while. I've just done sort of stand-up shows, really, or themed or lumped around a theme, and this one is much more of a story. So that kind of made it easier to put together. But yeah, it's not like a conscious... And I never really even think, you know, I never... When I'm putting something together, I'm thinking, oh, this is really offensive, this will upset people. I'm kind of a bit upset when people get offended by an email me and tell me that I'm the most offensive man they've ever met. That's not really what I was... No. You know, I'm trying to be funny. So, you know, you take something really extreme. You know, some people just don't have that sense of humour, where you take something so far that it's all right, that it allows us to laugh at a horrible subject. You know, I don't think paedophilia is funny. I don't think someone being abused as a child is funny. But I think there are ways to find comedy within that. And I think it's actually quite good to be able to laugh at it, because it's so horrible. That it's good for us to be able to kind of, you know, within the context of that room for that hour and a half, that we can go, okay, well, let's have a laugh, and let's laugh about that, because it's so horrible. What else can you do, you know? And so, you know, I'm not thinking, right, I must put in a terrible bit of room. But, you know, it's kind of nice. It's nice to fight, you know, to have that and go, good, well, I've got that. I've got a bit that will be interesting and challenging. But I'm just really trying to find things that will be funny and that haven't really been done before, hopefully. Yeah. That's and just find, you know, just keep working on what I'm doing, who I am as a performer, and just trying to, you know, it's just interesting to be at this point where I can be at the cutting face of comedy and trying out the cold face of comedy and the cutting edge of comedy and trying to find interesting stuff, rather than most men of my age who are either so successful they don't have to bother anymore, or have given up because they're not successful. So I'm kind of at this middle ground.
Yeah.
When Ben Elton goes on tour, you kind of go, that bloke hasn't seen stand-up comedy for 15 years. That's why he's doing this. But I'm right there still with people doing stand-up comedy, and I know what's kind of interesting and what isn't interesting. So yeah.
Nice. Do you find that, like, if certain bits don't resonate with the audiences, and reading your blog, you've had, you know, a few people walk out over the course of this tour?
Yeah.
Does that still affect you? Kind of.
I don't like it. But, you know, it just will. You can't take it personally, because it just, whatever you do, someone will be offended by it. This show, less people than ever have been offended by it. Less people have walked out than any of my shows I've ever done. But, you know that if you're going to do something about any subject, there'll be someone who either doesn't have the right sense of humour to get it, or, you know, who doesn't think you should joke. It's just, it's a knee-jerk reaction most of the time. So, you know, people go, you can't, you know, someone walked out of the show I did with her, it was talking about having sex with monkeys and how that was by necessity rape because monkeys couldn't consent. And then she goes, I don't think you could joke about rape. And you go, well, I'm not. You know, she goes, rape isn't funny. And I go, yeah, monkey rape. You know, so some people just hear that, you know, someone hear you talk about Jesus or a paedophile and they go, right, that's it, you know, and then they're just up. And that's what happened in Derby was these people just, I said Jesus didn't exist within the first 2 minutes and they just, right, they were up and out and the bloke left his coat behind. It was such a knee-jerk reaction. He had to come back to his coat. Stormed down. So, you know, that will happen. It doesn't make me go, yeah. It makes me, that's a shame. You know, in that gig in Derby, it was an odd mix of people.
Mm.
And people obviously didn't know what to expect. And, you know, there was a couple of really old ladies, 70-year-old ladies, kind of the big hair. And I just was seeing them not laugh. And it made me laugh because they weren't laughing at anything. And it made me laugh because I knew I was just being childish. And they were just sitting there, too polite to leave and too polite to enjoy it. But it made me feel a bit sad that I was ruining these women's evening. Yeah. That they were just sitting there polite again.
Do you ever wonder when there are, for example, you know, two old ladies sat in the audience, quite how they came to be there?
Well, yeah, you do, but then you think, with this show, you know, you might look back and go, oh, it's like a sweet show about the posters of a little boy and, you know, smiling. You might think, oh, this is nice, this will be a nice little Laurie Lee look at, you know, whatever, the childhood. And, you know, some people go and see everything at a theatre, it just depends which theatre you're at, you know, and that's okay. And, I wouldn't want to put people going off to the theatre, but then my stuff is quite difficult to just. Arrive at and not having it, you know, just find me and never seen before. A lot of people do come and see me for the first time and go, this is great, I really like it. But if you've never seen any comedy before, then it's not really the place to start. Because it's about, you know, same with Stuart, really. And Stuart's stuff is so about deconstructing comedy.
Yeah.
That if you haven't seen comedy before, it's meaningless because you don't really know what he's deconstructing. So if you just want jokes, you know, some people just want jokes, someone goes, well, you know, in Glasgow, someone walked out and said, when you're going to tell a joke, that's, you know, 20 minutes in, you go, well, look, there's not going to be anything for you in this joke, if that's what you want, because it's clear it's a story and it's clear everyone else is enjoying it. That's just what I find. If I'm not enjoying something, I'll leave. I wouldn't ever email the performer, I don't think, and tell them I hate them, go on their guest book or listen to everything they did and then comment on it, which some people would do.
Yeah,
I'd just go, okay, well, I didn't enjoy that, maybe I'll leave, maybe I'll walk out, maybe I'll stay to the end. But I'll just go, well, I won't go and see that again. You know, that's a shame, I didn't like that. But yeah, some people don't. Some people are going to have to make a big fuss about it.
You mentioned the podcasts briefly earlier. How do you find the dynamic of working with Andrew Collins, who is, by his own admission, not a comedian?
Yeah, I like him. I mean, he's very funny, though. That's the thing about him. So I think we did a radio. I was a guest on his Six Music show for a couple of years ago. And really enjoyed it, and it was sort of a shame when it stopped, so we just thought we'd have a crack at this. And I really like working with him because, you know, I don't think it is a straight man funny man thing, but it just gives it an interesting dynamic. He's we don't really prepare it. I mean, he sometimes looks at the papers and says we might talk about this and might talk about this, and he sometimes has something to put out, but it's kind of quite good to have someone who's the kind of more sensible one who prepares. So I mean, probably within in Lee and Herring, that was almost in writing. That was almost my role to be the one who worked hard and, you know, and put things together. And Stu would come in a bit later on sometimes. You know, once I'd written something or whatever. And it's kind of nice to be in that position where I can come in and just know I'm allowed to mess around. And if I, you know, when he says I'm not going to say anything, then I find it quite difficult in the podcast to actually talk because it's very much about me bouncing off him and about him saying something that I then react to. It's actually quite to do it on my own. It wouldn't. If it was just one madman in an attic swearing. It would be really weird because there's someone sensible keeping it on course. I mean, when he goes, he starts being swearing and going a bit, and I don't really like it. He shouldn't swear. Really. But it works. You know, I think it works pretty amazingly well. It's very hard to find someone you can work with. You know, I was lucky to find Stu very early on. And we really clicked, and our sense of humour was so the same, really.
Mm.
And our way of doing things was very, you know, our outlook was a bit different, but our sense of humour was so the same. And it's just nice to meet, to be working with someone that you have that comfort with. And I think with me and Stu, it's when we got back together again, because we'd worked together for so long, we kind of know when the other one's going to speak, even, you know, we kind of know what the other one's going to say, we're ad-libbing, and then, so it makes it, you know, it just naturally falls into this thing where we don't really talk over each other. When we were messing around in the last gig we did together, it kind of just very naturally came together. With Andrew, I think we're still kind of finding, you know, the parameters of it, which is sort of interesting in its own way. But I think it really works well, and people, again, most people, some people hate it, but most people, and still listen to it every week, most people,
60 hours.
Most people, you know, seem to really get it, and it obviously, and to just have that opportunity to do something, because I really want to get a point with stand-up where I'm just going on stage and just chatting, maybe with a couple of ideas in the back of mind, and that's often how these shows come together. But it's very hard to go, you know, if someone said, oh, you're going to talk for an hour and 6 minutes every week, just about the stuff in the papers and what's happened to you, I would be sort of sitting down trying to write at least chapter headings and, yeah, you know, a few gags. And with this, it's absolutely none of that. So it literally is going on, no idea what you're going to say. You might have just thought, oh, I've got a good story if I remember to tell it. But often we forget, you know, you're going, oh, that was this thing happened. We both write so much in the weekend on our blogs, you know, but yeah, we often go back to that. But it's, yeah, it's a really interesting discipline. And, you know, I just think it's kind of amazing. If we said one funny thing in the hour and 5 minutes, 6 minutes, I would sort of go, that isn't that kind of quite amazing? Some people have an incredible, for free. Yeah, some people have kind of incredible high expectations of it. But I think it's, and there's hardly any of them that come to go, that was really rubbish. And even if they are, I think that's good, because it kind of proves that it's, that we're working without a safety net. You know, so if there's one that doesn't work, or one of us is too grumpy, or the dynamic's a bit wrong, I find those almost, they're all still interesting to listen to. And so it makes the one, you know, there's one a couple of weeks ago where I think pretty much start to finish it was firing on all cylinders for an hour and 6 minutes, and nothing had really been prepared. There were a few things that had been knocking around in my head that I kind of brought into it, but so that's really exciting for me as a comedian, to be able to just go on and talk and see what comes out and be funny. It's easy to talk, but we're doing it now, so it's kind of hard to, it's hard to be funny. And I think without Andrew there, I wouldn't really, you know, this would be what it would be like. This isn't that interesting.
Have you checked the podcast charts today?
Yes, we've been holding steady at 8. We went down to 8 late last night.
I imagine Andrew's quite panic-checking.
Well, I think I'm worse than him. I mean, I get very wrapped up in the internet and can just get trapped looking at the same 6 things over and over again, and especially when it's something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, that, I mean, that's, it's because it's gone up because I kind of mentioned it on Twitter, and that the retweeting thing has kind of made people, loads of people have gone and subscribed in 2 days. So it's, but it's still pretty incredible to get into the top 10. We never thought we would, and we'll be soon, very soon, not in the top 10. But it's still, you know, I'm astonished it's held good for three. You know, we've been between 6 and 10 in the charts all week, and
yeah,
and that's, I thought we might pop in and pop out again, but it's so to speak. But it's no, it's. And I think that, I think, you know, that's if someone happens to look at that and go, what's this thing, what's the hell is this amongst all these names that I recognise, even if you knew what my name was, it isn't my name on the stage. Yeah. But, you know, all the famous comedians, and then suddenly we're up there on this thing we've recorded on a podcast,
yeah,
and on a computer in our hat in my attic, you know. So it's really, I'm very pleased about it, and I'm genuinely am slightly obsessed about that, and I think more excited about it than anyone else who's ever been in the IGs. So a lot of these people do, you know. Adam and Joe have talked about it, and I think some of the other 6 music guys, John Richardson, was talking about trying to get back, you know, trying to force his way into the top 10. So I think a lot of people are equally excited about it, but I'm cool enough to express that quite vehemently.
Finally, we should finish up. Seems we're quite busy at the moment, finishing up the tour.
Yeah.
Got the podcast, the blog, and the book coming on, which I think has to be finished by the end of next month.
You're correct about that, yes.
That's
what this computer was being brought into the room for.
How confident are you about getting the book done?
I think I probably will do it in time. I'm about halfway through it, you know. It's the weird thing about it is it's very personal. It's about the year I turned 40, and I'm really being honest about all the stuff I did, both, you know, the kind of dirtier things I got up to and the kind of sweeter things I got up to, and it's quite hard to write that with only 2 years perspective. What's quite interesting about this, the Headmaster's Son, is with 25 years you couldn't have really happy to, well, you know, actually it takes a little bit of bravery to go, am I going to talk about this, am I going to mention this horrible story from my childhood, but because it's so far ago you realise it's kind of okay. So it's quite difficult, and certainly without any reaction from anyone, you know, any audience to kind of guide you, it's difficult to know whether you're going too far, and or whether it starts to look like you're bragging about being a single man and you know, being, having girls and just you when you're my age. But I think because it's stuff that's all has happened. It's kind of getting the argument of the book together. I'm struggling with. So just the last 2 or 3 weeks where I've been really busy, I've just written up some stories of stuff that I, you know, that can't really change because they're stories, but it, and then you just keep going back over it and tinkering with it, and it kind of gets closer to being interesting to read. But I think May is, once the tour's over, obviously, I'll kind of,
yeah.
The plan is to just really pretty much concentrate on writing the book. I've got a few gigs, but until the end of May, and then start writing the new show in June and July.
The Head and Moustache.
Yeah.
Show.
So it's going to be tight, and I'm feeling the pressure of it, and it's, and it just, you just have no life outside of working, which, and outside of comedy, which gets a little bit wearing, and a little bit, you know, you just sort of think, you know, like I wrote my blog today about kind of wanting to give it all up, because you just think, you know, I'm not seeing my girlfriend, and I'm not, is it going to, am I just going to get to this point where, you know, my life seems to go in these cycles, and writing a book about it at the same time, I'm writing a book about meeting my girlfriend, but also aware that my life has kind of got in these 18 month cycles where, all right, I've become very fit and settled down with someone, and then kind of blow it all out my ass 18 months later. So it's kind of a bit weird to be writing about something that's kind of current and a bit more difficult. But I think I should probably get it done. But I sort of feel like maybe it's a shame I've got to do a book and the Edinburgh show, really. I hope it doesn't stretch me too thin. But I wrote for fucking 40 in 6 weeks.
Really?
Well, 5 weeks, really. Okay. Yeah. So, you know, and then writing an hour of stand-up is, especially when you're trying to write a 100,000-word book, is kind of nothing, really. You're aware that 2 months of gigging something every night and talking over the issues, and, you know, I've got quite a lot of ideas for the Edinburgh show that are kind of bubbling around in the background,
yeah.
And that's kind of the best way to work these things, really, is just, you've got it, you know. Often I feel bad to go through 2 weeks where you feel like you've done absolutely nothing, and I've sort of got drunk and sat around the house feeling miserable, but then just somehow at the back of your mind is working, you know, it's all kind of swirling around,
yeah.
Somehow when you actually do sit down, and when you do get to this point that I'm at now where I'm quite scared, suddenly it starts to come together. So, sorry, my curry, my jaw freeze is hitting me.
That seems like a good time to.
It does. Best of luck.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah,
thank you very much indeed for your time.
Good. Thank you. Brilliant.
Thank you.
No problem.